Hello, everyone, and welcome to another NBC Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Kurt Nealon, the managing editor of Pro Basketball Talk over at NBC Sports, and I'm here with Dominic Ridgard. Good morning, Dom.
Good morning, Kurt. How are you, man?
Doing good. And by the way, a belated Happy Father's Day to you.
Oh, thanks, and same to you, Kurt.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's about time that men were finally celebrated in this country. You know, it's been so long since you know, we're really trampled upon.
Exactly,
so
right? We need our own holiday.
And we've got with us today as a special guest, Ed Isaacson of NBA Draft Blog and Roto World, our draft expert at Pro Basketball Talk. How are you doing this morning, Ed?
All right, how are you guys doing?
Doing good, and we have Ed here because we're talking draft and looking at a lot of players over the next hour. And I think we'll just get right into this. Obviously, I think if there's one thing we know about the draft, it's pretty much that it's going to go Karl-Anthony Towns and then Jahlil Okafor at the top of the draft board. It starts to get interesting more at three. We'll start there. We've talked and Ed's written about this before. I guess the easy way to say this is, are you more in the Towns or Jahlil Okafor camp? But I got a feeling that really, Ed, you're getting a really solid foundational piece with either of these guys, right?
Yeah, I've said that from the beginning. Minnesota and LA, as long as they pick one of those two, they can't really go wrong. It may affect the style they play a bit, but you're still getting players who are probably going to both be guys who average, 20 points, 10 rebounds, in the NBA.
And somebody like Towns, I mean, I see him just as a better fit with a more modern NBA offense, but also just the pieces they have there. He seems like a guy who can play with Ricky, with everybody that they've, with Wiggins, with the guys they've brought in. I see him as a guy who should be, I mean, it's a young team that's got a learning curve, but a guy whose skill set is pretty wide-ranging.
It definitely is. He has a lot to offer. A lot of it, he didn't get to show a lot of what he probably could be capable of 3-4 years down the road while he was at Kentucky, especially with the perimeter shooting. And the shooting is, really the main area where he separates himself from Okafor. As of right now, Towns is probably a better defender than Okafor, certainly a better shot blocker. But I'm not that concerned long-term about Okafor's defensive ability. But, yeah, when you look at sort of the athletes that Minnesota has sort of has as their young core with Rubio and Wiggins and Zach LaVine, and Shabazz Muhammad played well before he got injured during the year, Karl Towns should be able to fit in right away with that.
And you mentioned Okafor's defense, which was kind of the knock on him, and this there was this sense, I think, among some fans and people that, oh my gosh, here we're dealing with the next Carmelo Anthony, where he can score, but what's he going to do at the other end? And I don't know if you can build around him. And I'll just say, out here in LA, you hear a lot of, you're not going to be able to play him next to Julius Randle. Neither of them are good enough defensively. I'm not of the mind that that's necessarily true. I think look, he's a big guy in the middle, and you've now got two quality athletic guys up front, and you put them, frankly, with Jordan Clarkson, and suddenly, hey, you're starting to get somewhere.
Yeah, and here's the big thing about Okafor's defense is there's certainly not a lack of effort. And by the national championship game, he was noticeably improved from November and December. I think the biggest issue with him is he still has to learn how to play defense. In high school, it was never really an issue for him. And I think, concepts sort of, such as, coming out and, hedging on pick and rolls and how to handle that and being a little more physical while defending in the post, he never really had to go up against high-quality big guys in high school, were all sort of new to him. So there is a learning curve for him. But you already saw when he came out for the draft lottery, he had noticeably lost weight. And, as he's going through the workout process, You know, there's been a lot of comments on how he seems already much lighter on his feet. And for someone who has just phenomenal footwork on the offensive end, it's not out of the question to think he'll be able to translate that same kind of footwork to defense.
Yeah, I've got to say, I first saw him play, and actually D'Angelo Russell as well, at Adidas Nations out in Long Beach a couple years ago. And I was sitting with a couple of people, and I was watching him in the post just destroy guys. And this is before his senior year of high school, and I looked at the guys next to me, and I'm like, and one of them's a scout, and I'm like, his footwork's really good. He's, like, better than a number of NBA centers. And the scout kind of looks like at least half of them right now. Like, he is so polished. And at the time, you know, like you said, I don't think his conditioning is where it needed to be, and he looked a little bit, you know, Al Jefferson-like, and that it was this beautiful set of moves below the basket. And Ralph Sampson was his coach, and after the thing, I'm like, you know, he's really a phenomenal player below the rim, and he's like, he just hasn't figured out he can play above the rim yet. Like, he'll get there.
And he did it this year at times when you gave him the space. You know, if guys like Tyus Jones or Quinn Cook, Jerry Grace Allen were able to get into the lane and clear a little bit of space, oh, they just threw the ball up there for Okafor, and he went up and got it. It wasn't a real issue for him. And said once he's lost a little bit of the weight, gets a little bit more spring in his legs, I don't see it being a problem for him.
So we've got two quality pieces. The draft really starts to get interesting in terms of just who's going to go where at number three. There's been all sorts of rumors that you know, Sam Hinkie and Philadelphia are seriously considering Kristaps Porzingis at three. But, you know, at the end of the day, I still think they're going to go with Russell. I think they're going to – that Russell seems like a fit, so let's talk a little bit about him. This is a guy who can do a little bit of everything. He can score, but he's got really good vision for the floor. He's kind of got a well-rounded point guard game.
He's definitely well-rounded. He's just a natural when you put him in the pick and roll. You know, sees the floor. You know, I think his biggest issue right now is he's just very sloppy in a lot of the things he does. I think he has a higher regard of what he's capable of than what's actually, you know, he's able to do on the floor. You see it in his shooting. You see it in a lot of the passes he makes. And you see it, you know, when he tries to get into the lane, especially since he really doesn't have great speed. He's not, you know, the kind of high-level athlete, you know, we're really seeing in other parts of this draft. But in terms of his understanding of the game and what he, you know, what he can do when he has the ball on his hand, he certainly has a lot to offer. And I think the one thing that he'll really bring to Philadelphia is just needed excitement for a fan base that really needs it at this point. Yeah, especially with the, you know, the Joel Embiid news last week. I know a lot of Philly fans buy into Sam Hinkie's plan, and it's supposed to be really going somewhere. But it's still going to take some time. So in the meantime, putting a D'Angelo Russell out there will at least create enough excitement to keep people filling some seats.
Exactly. And look, it's just a natural fit. When you think about, like you said, we'll see where Embiid is this season, but, you know, eventually getting him in there. Noel started to play a little bit last year and show something. They get Šarić in a year, and suddenly you're like, hey, now we've got a point guard and a, you know, a couple of guys up front and a big three, and suddenly that became, you know, you can start to see it come together on paper a little bit. So, and now we get to, you know, and Dom can certainly chime in. He's there in New York. How big does it go over, Dom, when Porzingis is taken by the Knicks at four?
No, oh boy, I don't think it'll go over too well, really. You know, the unknown scares a lot of people. But it's funny, and Ed, you could talk to this. You know, the mystery of these overseas players, you know, I think it benefits their draft stock. You know, the hype around them, it starts to build and build and build, and you know the different rumors and the different smoke screens have Porzingis, you know, as high as three. You know, you see some of the rumors put him a little higher, but you kind of put those to the wayside. Do you think that Porzingis could go as high as three?
Oh, yeah, I certainly think Philadelphia, Sam Hinkie is definitely giving him a long look because he's, no matter what, he's a guy who's just going to pick who he thinks is the best player available. And if in his mind Porzingis is that guy, it doesn't matter that, he has Noel, that Embiid may or may not be back, that Saric is coming over in a year. He'll deal with that later. If Porzingis is his guy, he's going to go ahead and take him.
I think a lot of people aren't really sure of Porzingis' strengths and skill sets. You know, we can't watch this. We don't really watch this guy play the way we saw Towns and Okafor play on the big stage in the NCAA tournament. Like, what does he do that has hit, that has teams so intrigued? What makes him so special that he's almost a consensus, I think, top five pick at this point?
Well, I mean, it all starts with the fact that he's just 19 years old and, basically, a seven-footer. Add to that the fact that he can shoot the ball really well. He has close to NBA range already, if not, if he hasn't already developed it. And the agility that, the way he works around the perimeter and comes off the screen is, like a guy who's probably a half foot shorter than him. So there's a lot to like about him on the offensive end. Add to that he runs the floor well. He has what seems to be a high motor, at least most of the time. But as I said, it all comes back to the fact that he's a seven-footer who's only 19 years old and has at least some defined skills already.
And somebody you can see blending in with, again, the way the game is going right now, where it's less of the traditional bigs. He's a big guy you can put out there. And on the defensive end, maybe get some rim protection and a guy who can eventually, once he gets a little stronger, body up. But that's part of the concern with him is, you and I have talked about him, and we'll have a piece coming up on Pro Basketball Talk later about him. He's a guy who's a couple years away from really contributing a lot, though, right?
Right. I mean, I think if you set him up wide open as a spot shooter, he'll be able to contribute. If you're expecting him to give you the kind of value that you expect out of a number three, number four, number five pick, you're going to have to wait. And I think that's going to be the part that confuses fans a bit because of the amount of hype around him. I think a lot of people are really expecting a polished product right now, and he's far from it. And no matter how well he played in the Spanish ACB, it's not the NBA. It is good, but it's not the NBA. The game isn't as fast as the NBA game. It's certainly not as physical. So there's aside from the fact that he's still raw in many ways, skill-wise, you have to add to that he has to adjust to the actual, NBA game, which is often a thing that really makes or breaks a lot of these international players who come over here, is, the inability to make that kind of adjustment.
While we're talking about stars in Europe, and let's move over to Mario Hezonja, the shooting guard out of the great program at Barcelona, also in the ACB League. If nothing else, Mario Hezonja believes he can play in the NBA tomorrow. He comes with plenty of confidence, but he also comes with a really nice skill set, doesn't he, Ed?
Another very good shooter. He plays like a prototypical shooting guard in the NBA. He's a very good athlete, which sort of gets underwhelmed a bit in the systems that they play over in Europe. But, you get him out in transition, he's capable of some highlight dunks. And he has sort of the physical tools that he could possibly be a good NBA defender. He's not going to be one right away. He's really not one in Europe right now. So to expect him to do it at the NBA level is near impossible. But the physical tools are there for him to eventually get there. The confidence, which you mentioned already, which basically borderlines on cockiness, is, a lot of people seem to make them like him more. I'm not so sure how it's really going to play over when he gets to the NBA if he sort of stays this way. A lot of guys who are better than him, who came in with sort of a big ego, rather quick. And the adjustment of him coming in and being, you know, being that, well, you know, coming off the bench, or he's going to be a, you know, a fourth or fifth option while he's on the floor. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that. And with, you know, if he ends up with a strong coach, that could be something that sort of makes him a little distant as well.
Yeah, and he may well. He's somebody who could fall to somewhere like six with George Karl, which would be interesting for him. And yeah, while we're discussing the overseas guys, the one other guy that nobody's seen out here as much, and you saw more of, who was a high school stud here in the United States and decided to get paid and play against men over in China, which was Emmanuel Mudiay, the big physical point guard that it was rumored the Knicks like, but is probably going to fall, I think, farther down the board to six or seven or something. Talk about him a little bit. He's a physical freak. I mean, that guy's got NBA physical gifts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, close to 6'5". He has almost a pro-ready build already. A very good athlete. And, again, he has, you know, he has at least the beginnings of what you would consider a very good steal for the game. Where he really lacks at this point are in the actual skills. And I don't think China helped him as much as, you know, playing in college probably could. The injury did, injuring his foot did set him back a bit. But, and he did learn, you know, improve his shooting and his ability to make reads in the pick and roll a little bit. But the defense over in China is, horrendous may even be an old, a generous word. U.S. guards, guys who are, you know, often brought in as sort of filler to fill out rosters come, you know, February, March, April, guys like Will Bynum and some others are having 70-point games over in China.
You always hear the guys that come over from China, like midseason acquisitions, averaged like 35. And you're like, wow. And then they sit on the bench and never play. So it's funny that you say that.
C.J. McCollum's older brother, Aaron McCollum, had an 80-something point game.
That's insane.
Earlier in the year in China. And he's not even really on the NBA radar.
Wow. Yeah.
That really shows you what's going on with the defense. So in terms of how much he was really able to take in from a game point of view, I don't know if it was all that much. He certainly handled going to China well, going through what he wanted him to do. So I really think in terms of his maturity, the time, the year spent over there was really helped him out a lot, and probably puts him, ahead of, most 19-year-olds in that regard.
Hey, Ed, let's say 1, 2, and 3 shakes out the way we kind of suspect with Towns, Okafor, and Russell. Who would you take if you were the Knicks? Would you take Porzingis or would you take Mudiay?
I wouldn't take either one of them.
No, who would you take? I was just going to say, I was going to add C. If not, who else, who would you pick?
My first choice would be Justice Winslow.
That's a good choice.
I like, he's someone who can, even though he's young, has the maturity and the physical ability to come in right away and contribute on both ends of the floor. Right away, he would be New York's best defender. I have no doubt about that. Plus, he's someone who's really just starting to learn how to shoot from the perimeter and still shot more than 40% from the college 3-point line. Can get out and run the floor. He's a smart player, so you can get him on the wing and the triangle. He's going to be a smart passer. So there's really a lot to like about what he can offer. But if you're not really looking at, adding a wing at that point, then to me, I think the best option would probably be Willie Cauley-Stein. Just give the Knicks that solid presence in the middle.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's been all over the mock drafts from, five at with the Magic all the way down to, 11 or so. He's he's a guy all over the map, but he strikes me as the kind of guy whose game, again, is going to translate when you're talking about a league that will, by its very nature now, start to copy what's going on in Golden State. And you know, good luck with that, by the way. Shooters like that and then Draymond Greens are just lying around everywhere. Those guys are easy to replicate. But Cauley Stein's the kind of guy you can use because he is somebody who can get out and run. And he is certainly, I mean, he is certainly a big we've seen who can hedge out. You know, they used him brilliantly in Kentucky, I thought, to hedge out and defend and still be in the paint and block shots. He's somebody who can come in and impact immediately on that end of the floor.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this notion that seems to be out there that Willie Cauley-Stein can guard all five positions is a little exaggerated. But I can't recall a seven-footer who can defend on the perimeter as well as he can. And you add that length while he does it, and, I mean, it could be a nightmare. Now, he also had the benefit of, I think a lot of players sort of hesitated of trying to get by him because with Kentucky's system having the four big guys, there was always going to be another big guy right behind him waiting for you. So, you know, the choice of, you know, whether to shoot the jumper or try and get by Cauley-Stein and either meet Towns or Dakari Johnson or Marcus Lee, usually left shooting the jumper as the best option. But in terms of how he moves on the perimeter, how he sees the floor as the defender, he's ready to come in right away and help the team there.
It's going to be interesting. Let's talk about guys who might be able to help sooner rather than later. There's a couple of those guys. You tend to look at the seniors, someone like a Frank Kaminsky who's going to come in and you know, he may not have the ceiling, but you can somebody who can probably help you pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, especially since he has what is basically a defined role when he can come into. You know, as a pick-and-pop guy on the perimeter, depending on who he's matched up against, he can easily go into the post, has very good footwork, just a great knack for scoring. No matter where he is on the floor, you know, he's not going to help you all that much defensively. But, he has a good idea. He just doesn't have the physical tools. But, you know, he's still 7'1". And if you have a 7'1 guy around the basket, it's still going to make some people hesitate whether he can jump all that high or not. So, he's ready to come into a situation once he adjusts the speed of the NBA game, he should be able to, find a good spot in the rotation right away.
Do you see him as a lottery pick? Do you see him as top 14?
He'll be near the end of the lottery. Uh-huh. I think there's a lot that needs to shake out, in the first 10 picks or so. And all it takes is really one wild card pick to sort of throw everything else off. it could be the Knicks, but even going down further, I don't think a lot of people really have an idea what Denver's thinking.
Yeah.
Charlotte, especially since Stanley Johnson said he doesn't want to play for them, whether that would dissuade them or not. And plus, a lot of these teams are their picks are on the table.
Yeah.
Depending if any of these teams can make a deal and who they make a deal with, you could see Frank Kaminsky going as high as 8, or you could see him possibly dropping to 15, 16.
In the broad strokes of this draft, is this a case where, and I think you and I talked about this before, once you get to, say, 7, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there, depending on how you want to break it out, you start to run into the potential guys, the guys that are like, this guy might be able to do this for you if you can develop him a little bit. But you go pretty deep with those guys in this draft. Is that fair to say that you can get down into the Bobby Portises and Oubres and R.J. Hunters of the world and Sam Decker and say, you can go pretty deep in this draft with guys who might be able to help you once you develop them a little bit?
No, you're definitely right about that. And in terms of sort of talent level, it's pretty even from that mid-lottery to almost the end of the first round, there's really not a lot of things that separate a bunch of these guys, especially when you break them out into their individual positions. You have a lot of good shooters. You have a bunch of athletic wings who like to try and get to the rim. You have a lot of good power forwards. They're probably the more versatile group. The only thing that's really missing are real good big men after you get out of the lottery. So it's possible that I remember when I did my first mock draft, as I went through the teams, I kept looking for a place for Sam Dekker. I like Sam Dekker a lot. But as I got to each team, I would just come up with one better option for them. And next thing you know, I'm in the early 20s, and I'm finally finding a spot for someone like Sam Dekker, who in some minds is a late lottery talent. And that's what's going to happen to a lot of guys in this draft is, because the talent's so even, there's going to be guys who drop through no fault of their own. It's just the nature of who teams have been able to get workouts with, how those guys performed on that day, and who would really fit a team dynamic.
When you talked about Charlotte earlier, I had heard from someone, as far as that the guy they like is actually Devin Booker, which is an interesting fit there because that's a team that Lord knows they need some shooting. And Booker, for everybody who forgets, is one of those many guys coming into this draft out of Kentucky, but he can shoot the rock.
Oh, yeah, he's easily one of the top two or three shooters in this draft. And I think I have to double check, but I think he's the youngest player
in
this draft.
Yeah, he's 18. He's really young.
Yeah, he won't turn 19 till almost the end of the year. Or he just turned 18, I think. Something like that. But I think he's the youngest player. And, again, we're talking about a guy who grew up in a basketball family. His father was a former Big 12 Player of the Year back in the early 90s. So he has a great understanding of the game. He's another guy who, because of the platoon system, really didn't get to expand his game much during the year at Kentucky. But, for his age, he's a good enough ball handler right now. He sees the floor well. There's always the possibility of making, being able to create for others off the dribble. And I'm not sure where the idea that he's not a good defender started, because he's much better than people give him credit for. And again, I think the Kentucky system sort of, puts these perimeter defenders in really bad situations because, Coach Calipari's idea of how to defend is to let all the perimeter defenders pressure as much as possible, knowing that you have all these big guys sitting in the back waiting for them. So go out, try and pressure. And yeah, that led to a lot of people being able to get by Booker, but if you let him just go out there and play normal defense, he handles himself fine.
Some other interesting guys as we move down the board. I know that you're and another guy who falls into that group, but I know that you are high on Bobby Portis out of Arkansas, the sophomore, who's one of the high-energy guys in this draft.
Yes, definitely a high-energy guy, and you're right. I'm a big fan of him. I see him as probably one of the top 10 talents in this draft. His ability to score inside and out, and he's still getting better, and he has that body, which admittedly does need a little work, but it's big enough where he can be a real solid low post presence when needed. So if a team wants to go a bit smaller at the five position, you can easily play Portis there. And playing at Arkansas helped him a lot because that was a high-energy team, and everyone who was on the floor had to be able to run the court. And even when they pressed, it wasn't like they put Portis, sitting in the back around the rim. He was up there at that second level, so he had to get out there and guard guys. So he moves his feet really well for his size and his weight. So he's a guy who's, again, has sort of a defined role where you can sort of picture where he can fit in with a lot of these teams and contribute right away for them.
We're going to move on down, talk about a couple other guys. The other senior besides Kaminsky of interest in this is Jerian Grant out of Notre Dame. He's a guy who seems like a guy who, look, again, the ceiling might not be super high for him, but he is a senior who can come in and probably help you pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, and I think a lot, you know, when he went through the academic issues that led to him being dismissed from Notre Dame, you know, halfway through his junior season, it really helped him with his maturity, and it also helped him with his game because he came back a much better point guard than he was. He was always a very good scorer. His ability, his size with his ability to take players off the dribble was never really in question. And his shooting percent, his shooting ability is a lot better than his senior year percentages showed. I think he, you know, forced too many bad shots last year. But he is a threat. He's probably closer to a 40% shooter than a 30% shooter that he showed this past season. And he's definitely good enough that you put him in the pick and roll. The defender is going to have to come out and guard him. He's a good athlete. He has the length where he could probably turn into at least an average to above average defender at the NBA level. And he's a leader. Just watching that Notre Dame team, which got, you know, was within a basket of the Final Four this year, you know, at times he had to carry them on his back, and that wasn't a problem for him.
Yeah, I know in recent years, you know, the little known recruit from like the small college that kind of his steam kind of gets rolling as the draft comes up. Usually these guys are more tenured in their college career. I feel like that guy this year is Cameron Payne from Murray State. He kind of fits that, I guess, the same narrative of a Elfrid Payton or even going back to a Damian Lillard. Do you think that's fair to say that he's like the small college kid that could have a huge impact in this draft?
Oh, he certainly can. And in my mind, I actually think he's the best long-term point guard prospect in this draft.
Wow.
And, you know, we talked earlier about Russell's ability to do a bit of everything. He can score. He can pass the ball. Payne does just as much. And he's a better defender than Russell. In a lot of ways, he reminds me a lot of Elfrid Payton last year, except a much better shooter. But it's not a very conventional style of basketball that he plays, but it's effective. And he finds ways to get things done where you try and imagine putting other players in those situations, and you're not really sure if they're able to pull off some of the things that he can. And that's what I like about Payne, is nothing really seems to faze him when he's on the floor. It doesn't matter if you throw two guys on him, you try and trap him. He figures out a way to get things done. And again, if we're talking about someone who's only a sophomore coming out of Murray State, there's plenty of room left for him to grow as a player, even though physically he may not be what is the NBA ideal now. He measured it just under 6'2 at the NBA Combine. But he finds ways to make up for it.
You haven't mocked to the Thunder. So do you see him kind of being like that Reggie Jackson role, coming off the bench and maybe in the crunch time lineup, but more of a facilitator rather than a scorer?
I think he'll be able to offer a bit of both.
Okay.
You know, coming off the bench for either them, and also, you know, since the beginning, Indiana has always been very high on him. So you can sort of see him coming in either role, just being an energy guy. And if the team needs him to add some scoring, he can do that. If they just need him to go out there, run the offense, and get players the ball, he can do that too. And, you know, the one place I think he's just going to have to improve a bit is on the defensive end. But the rest of his game is pretty close to being NBA ready right now.
All right, so the guy I like in the potential category is Kelly Oubre out of Kansas. So tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, I can go on for the rest of this podcast and tell you why you're wrong. No. I'm just not a fan of him and his game. It's just something about watching him play that never really set right with me. The athleticism and the length, you can't deny that, and it's sort of a great foundation for him to work with. But I think his understanding of the game right now is even below someone who is just a freshman in college.
Wow.
It's gonna be a big adjustment for him. You saw him at times at Kansas where he just seems lost on both ends of the floor. The shots seemed to come along a bit at times, but he still ended up only a 36% shooter from long range. The one thing that there is really to like about him is he is aggressive when he wants to, try and get to the rim. And he's just very graceful as he does it. And he takes these long strides, and he's not afraid of trying to go up and throw the ball down on anyone who's in his way. I'm just not sure how quickly he's going to be ready at the NBA level and how long teams are going to be willing to sort of wait for him once he's at the NBA level to show what he can do, especially since, over the next couple of seasons, there'll be plenty of more Kelly Oubre coming into the NBA.
Interesting. We'll see how that pans out. The raw base is there. He's just got to land with a team that can actually really develop him. He strikes me as the kind of candidate, and a lot of these guys in the middle of the pack may, where some time in the D League under good coaching could really help them. Just time in the game at a little bit higher level with a lot more coaching, and ideally that's what a minor league system is for.
Right.
It seems to be, I'm not sure if it's a good trend or not, but it used to be when underclassmen, especially freshmen, were coming in, most if not all were coming off of very good seasons. Now, having freshmen have very good seasons, having a very good season seems to be more of the rarity. And you're having these guys like Kelly Oubre and Miles Turner and, even Devin Booker to some extent, who really didn't seem to do all that much, as freshmen. So how long the adjustment's going to be for them once they get to the NBA level is going to be something that needs to be, closely monitored.
What's the attraction with Miles Turner?
His length, his skill for his size, his ability to shoot the ball, and the fact that he has a good sort of solid base of skills for his age. But over the last 2 years, his rise has just been so rapid. I don't think it's really caught up to him yet. And I don't even think he scratched the surface yet, because in his own mind, he doesn't know what kind of player he can be yet. There's so much that he's probably capable of on the floor. He just hasn't been brought to a coach that can say, this is what you can do. I'll show you how to do it, and then you'll be able to go out there and do it every night for me.
When we start looking a little farther into the second round, who are some of the guys you like who think you could come, could come in and impact, that are going to be, again, if you're taken in the second round, you're obviously a bit of a project, but there are interesting guys out there. And I think at the top of the, he fell down the draft board, but there's something potentially there. Is Robert Upshaw on that list?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, and by the way, for people who don't know, he is a 7-foot center out of the University of Washington, a sophomore, whose skills are less the question, I would say.
He certainly has the ability to impact the game defensively. Before being dismissed from Washington, which was the second college he was dismissed from in a three-year college career, he was averaging close to 5 blocks a game through the the half a season he played this year. So he can certainly come in there and do that right away for a team. I think he has to learn how to be more of a team defender. He's sort of a guy who likes to set up around the rim and just swat anyone who comes near him. And his offensive skill is sort of limited right now to, waiting for some, some guard penetration and making, going up for an alley-oop. So there's not much he can offer right there, right now at that, on that side of the ball. But again, like I said, we're dealing with not only the character issues, but we're also dealing with the health issues. And, the heart issue that came out at the combine sort of took him from being a possibility at the end of the first round to more likely a second rounder. And, I'm not even fully sure yet, how much teams have been briefed on how the additional testing has gone at this point. He hasn't resumed workouts yet. So, there's going to be a lot of questions, but if you're, say you're a team like Philadelphia, who has 5 second-round picks, there's no harm in taking Robert Upshaw. But even if you're, you're a team that really doesn't need their second-round pick, you have a full roster, you added a first-rounder, he's a high-risk, high-reward kind of guy, and that's what the second round is all about.
Who else do you like that's probably fallen, down into that group, out of curiosity?
Jordan Mickey out of LSU was another one who actually, once Upshaw was dismissed, he became the NCAA's leading shot blocker. But he's a little more advanced offensively, a little more advanced as a complete defender. He doesn't have Upshaw's size, but, he's a guy who can come in and impact the game, at the power forward position or even as a small five. The guy who probably intrigues me the most in the second round is Cliff Alexander. Just because for someone who was so highly touted coming out of high school, in many places considered even the number 2 high school player coming into his freshman year last year, he showed almost nothing in his freshman year at Kansas. And at times it was even hard for Bill Self to even play him before his season got ended due to an NCAA investigation. But in terms of just raw physical ability and his ability to just muscle people around the basket and go up after rebounds and just play a power offensive game, he can be fun to watch. We talk about the D-League, he's perfect for that kind of situation where he can spend a year or two learning everything else he needs to know, especially if it's a team that owns their own D-League team where they're implementing their own system at the D-League level. You basically have a blank template in a lot of ways where you can sort of take these physical gifts and try and build it into the player you want.
So Ed,
go ahead, Dom.
Okay. So Ed, to put a bow on things, the draft in every sport, the fun thing about the draft is always retroactively looking back at it. And unfortunately for guys like us, when we have to say who we think is who deserves to be picked where, there's always someone that slips through the crack, or there's always someone that we were higher on that ends up kind of busting out. My question to you is, who is the guy that when we look back at this draft, people say, like, wow, how did he slip to this number? How did he fall to this number? Or how did this guy get picked ahead of him? Who is that guy that's going to be like, wow, the general manager's kind of that picked ahead of him missed out on this kid?
I think it's tough to target just one. But if there's one guy that really – I think will end up being a much better player than his draft position will probably indicate, is Rashad Vaughn, freshman out of UNLV. We talk about how raw a lot of these freshmen were. Vaughn has a very advanced scoring ability already for his age, and a sort of a good understanding of what he is capable on the defensive end. You know, I think we're looking at a guy who is going to be, you know, if not a 20-point scorer, you know, down the road in the NBA, he won't be that far off. You know, he's going to be one of these guys who comes, you know, who we look down the line, and he's going to impact teams. He's going to have that ability, you know, to come off. If he's coming off the bench, he'll put up points quickly. If you're going to start him, he, you know, he'll be a really solid, you know, second or third option one day.
You haven't mocked all the way at 29. Why do you think he's so far down draft boards?
Well, I think, yeah, well, I'll probably have him a bit higher when the second one comes out right before the draft.
Got it.
Probably, you know, more towards the, you know, the upper 20s. But because there are a lot of unknowns, we're talking about another guy, another freshman whose season was cut short for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was due to a knee injury, but he came back healthy for workouts. And he's one of the few guys where the individual workouts have really done a lot to help him. He's been one of the few guys who consistently, every team workout he's done, he's been a guy that, you know, teams have ended up coming away more impressed than they expected with him. So I think it's just a matter of how things sort of shake out. Again, you know, the way the draft works, you know, it takes one pick. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you sort, you know, you see him end up being in the late teens by the time we get to Thursday.
What about another guy who, if I think, is a bit of a situational pick, but could come in and give something right now? Is Deion Wright out of Utah, who is another, you know, look, nobody watches Utah basketball outside of Utah, and frankly, even in Utah. He's a big, tall point guard who might be able to help some teams immediately.
Oh, yeah, DeLon Wright has, you know, again, good size for the point guard position at 6'5", real long arms, can be a good defender, very good in the pick and roll, likes to get to the rim. He uses, you know, again, those long strides to attack the basket. He's just very active everywhere. Good passer. The one thing he's sort of missing, and I think it's the one thing that sort of separates him when you look at him and Jerry and Grant side by side, both very similar, is the shooting ability. DeLon Wright improved last year as a shooter, but he really just improved from bad to mediocre. So there's still a lot of work he needs to do there. But in terms of his ability to come in, give you 10, 15 minutes running the point, I think he's certainly someone who can help right away. Especially for a team, you know, mid, you know, in the 20s, who already has a good team and is just looking to add some additional pieces as they look for the playoffs again next year.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see somebody like, well, Lord knows Dallas could use some point guard help, or Portland is looking for someone they can throw out there behind, you know, behind Lillard. So there's teams like you said that are drafting in there. That'll be interesting to see who they pick up. And the other guy, I think it'll be interesting because of his style of play is, and I butcher pronouncing his name every time, is Montrezl Harrell out of Louisville.
Montrezl Harrell.
Montrezl
Harrell. The L is silent.
Oh. Montrezl
Harrell is, in terms of looking at this group of players, it's hard to think of a player who's much more fun to watch than Harrell. A high-energy guy, loves to hit the offensive board. He's one of these guys, you know, one of these few guys that are left that, you know, if anyone's going to be able to tear a rim away at some point anymore,
yeah.
He's a guy who can. He's a guy who can do it. Runs the floor well. You know, played for Rick Pitino, so he understands how to play defense. Again, the only thing I think that drops him a bit, one is in terms of playing the power forward position, I think he only measured to be 6'7", 6'7 and a half. So he's a bit undersized, and he doesn't really have the skill to play on the wing. And though he tried to improve his shooting ability, he's still a major work in progress. So he's a situational. He's a Kenneth Faried type. You put him in the right system, and he's going to do a lot of good things for you. You have him on the wrong team, and it's going to look very awkward at times.
I love that you mocked him to Washington, because I love when that team really picks up the pace when John Wall kind of gets the ball off the bounce and really sprints up the court. I think he would be awesome if you could get him, like the young guys, like the young thoroughbreds like Wall, Beal, and Porter. If you add him into just this, like almost like a NASCAR lineup where you just tell the guys to fly up and down the court, I think it would be awesome to watch.
Well, that was my thing. That was my thinking behind the pick, and within a week or two after that, they brought Harrell in for a workout, and they seem to be very high on him right now. So he's definitely something they're seriously considering at that pick.
No, I think that actually would be a really good lineup that Randy Whitman wouldn't play till the playoffs, of course, but it would be a really interesting lineup.
Keep it in the back pocket.
Yes. Well, I think we've gone through a lot. Ed, thank you so much for being here. Tell everybody actually where they can find you on Twitter and the blog and everything. And I know you've got another mock coming out, like you've been talking about as we get close to this.
Yep. You can find me on Twitter at NBA Draft Blog. The site is NBADraftBlog.com. Plus, you can find more of my work, my mock draft, my list, team. You know, my draft team needs just came out over on RotoWorld.com. And Kurt is always nice enough to include my thoughts in some of my posts over on Pro Basketball Talk.
Yeah, I do have that, and we've got, like I said, I got your thoughts and another guy, Nate Duncan, who's who I knew from Real GM and around, but also is somebody who's watched a lot of film on our fine friend Porzingis, and we've got a story coming up hopefully later today on him and just what to expect, since like you said, he's kind of the international man of mystery in this draft. But thanks again. Yeah, I'll tell you, for people who want to follow a draft, and I do a lot of my brushing up. Ed did for Roto World a breakdown by position, you know, 10 best centers, 10 best small forwards, etc. Great reading over for Roto World too. It's a great kind of one paragraph snapshot of a lot of the guys you're going to see picked up on Thursday night. So definitely check that out. You can find all that at Roto World. And Ed, thanks again. Dom, throw out your Twitter in the candle. We don't want to leave you out of this.
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at DL Riddy.
And thanks again for being here and throwing out some questions and not just dominating with Celtics talk as Boston.
I fought it back. I didn't ask one. I'm proud of myself.
Yeah. As soon as you can tell us what Boston's doing, look, that's a team with a lot of assets that could get really interesting in this draft. Just you're going to see, and I think you probably heard this too, you're going to see a lot of movement in this draft. This is one where the buzz around the league is you're going to see a lot of trades. Teams like Denver are out there looking to move, and there's a lot of teams looking to move.
Oh, yeah. I said that late lottery. I'm pretty sure just about everyone has their pick on the table right now. And, you know, if they can package it with some bad contracts and start to rebuild, you'll see a lot of these teams try and do whatever they can. Because the talent level is pretty even from that point towards the end of the first round. So you really aren't going to end up losing that much, even when you're looking to draft someone.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, there's the exciting new trend of once you get to about pick 25, nobody wants them. Like, everybody wants to get rid of those last five picks. If you're a first round pick, you get guaranteed money, even though it's around 25, it's around $1 million or less the rest of the way. The teams don't want to be locked into that anymore. They want those early second round picks where the player isn't a whole lot, you know, there isn't a great difference in talent level and they're not committed to him. So,
except San Antonio, and they'll end up with another star somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this. Draft Express has Bond going to him. You know, you're an underrated guy. I'm like, that would be like the most Spurs thing ever. Like, they just nabbed this guy that's brilliant. So, and I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor. You can find me at Basketball Talk on Twitter and, of course, all over Pro Basketball Talk. Thanks again, guys. Thanks for breaking down the draft, and we will talk to everybody later in the week after the picks and trades are made.